Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We're just weeks away from the start of what will likely be a very unusual school year. Last year, classroom instruction was upended by the coronavirus, and suddenly students and teachers were thrust into an online learning environment. It required some getting used to, not to mention equipment and a good internet connection, which not everyone had access to. But educators have spent the summer trying to address those issues, and the governor presented school districts across the state with three options. A, open up as you normally would with everyone in the classroom. B, a mixture of going back to school but with smaller classes featuring face coverings and social distancing on some sort of staggered schedule. Or C, offer only online classes. Charlotte Mecklenburg schools have opted for Plan B with a twist in what they're calling Plan B Plus. The first 2 weeks of school will be in the classroom on a staggered basis so that students can get to know their teachers, and then everything will move online until the coast is clear. CMS is also offering an online academy where all instruction, including those first 2 weeks, will be online for the entire semester. Other districts have made different choices dependent on the rate of infection in their area. Iredell-Statesville schools have chosen a straight Plan B, classroom instruction with reduced capacity. And here to talk about that and more is the superintendent of Iredell-Statesville schools, Dr. Jeff James. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mike. How are you this morning?
I'm good. As you might imagine, questions abound about what to expect here and around the state, about how this will work, what the metrics are that are being used to balance safety with the need to educate young people. And we'll ask as many of those questions as possible this hour. In addition to Dr. Jeff James, we're joined by Amanda Thompson, a CMS educator who also has a 9-year-old in the CMS system. Amanda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yvette Townsend Ingram is also a former teacher and an education consultant with Concierge Consulting and a parent of a student at West Mecklenburg High School. Thank you for joining us. Morning. You have to say good morning because it's radio. They can't see you nod.
Morning.
Okay, good. And Gabe Schull is a student at Ardrey Kell High who was elected to be a student advisor on the CMS board. Thank you for joining us, Gabe.
Morning, Mike. Thanks for having me.
You and the superintendent are on the same page. You're both wearing ties. And we requested someone from CMS, including Superintendent Ernest Winston, to be here for this program, but they declined to provide anyone, saying we're not going to be able to make that work. I don't know that this has anything to do with it because it was just announced yesterday, but Gabe, there's an emergency or a special meeting of the school board sometime early this afternoon, which I'm sure you'll be in attendance for. Any clue about why they're having that meeting today?
So the meeting is at 2 p.m. The agenda is already released and available to the public. So there's three things on that agenda. First is going to be like changing the calendar for middle college and early college, which is sort of a routine thing. Second is going to be making an exception for EC students of whether they can attend a brick and mortar facility or a schoolhouse, because there's some federal guidance that might change the way that schools are operating with EC students. And the third thing, the most interesting thing, is going to be a vote on whether a full Plan C should be replaced with the current option.
Well, you mean the Plan C would replace the current option if they vote yes?
Right, correct.
Okay. I know you're a student advisor, and we're going to talk about how this works for you a little bit later on in the program, and you don't know everything that they know as school board members because you weren't elected by the population at large, but what's your gut feeling here? Do you think it's going to be a Plan C option that goes into effect as of this afternoon?
I really can't say. Okay. I mean, I wish I knew, you know.
All right. I don't want to put you on the spot. Dr. Yeah. James, as I understand it, you just assumed the role of superintendent of Statesville-Iredell County Schools on July the 1st. So how big a role did you play in that district's decision to use Plan B?
Well, actually, Dr. Nutting and a team had been working on it, as many districts across the state, for several months. As soon as we were asked, toward the end of last year, districts across the state began collaborating and looking toward a plan. The what ifs, we were sort of given the framework of Plan A, B, and C, and then asked to come up with what that would look like in each county. So there's been a lot of collaboration across counties, statewide, a lot of conversations with the Department of Health and Human Services, the governor's office, of course, State Superintendent Johnson. So we've not done this, you know, in a box. It's been collaboration, probably the most collaboration I've seen us do as educators in quite some time as a state,
and trying to
come up with different alternatives.
You were the head of the Stanley County Schools prior to going to Statesville. What decision did they make?
They're going with Plan B, as we are. But when we say Plan B, we're actually, I think, offering the most flexibility. We're saying Plan B or C. So it's, as the parent, you can choose either. So really both plans.
So it's not unlike Charlotte-Mecklenburg at the moment. You're going with Plan B. Cabarrus County Schools will be fully remote. Gaston, Catawba, Lincoln, Rowan, Salisbury, Union County, and you have opted for Plan B. Probably they have their own shades of Plan B with reduced capacity in the classroom and social distancing. How are you planning to make that work? Because, you know, you have a school population, you only have a certain number of rooms, a certain number of desks, a certain number of teachers, a certain number of school buses. How do you make that work?
Well, it's not easy, and I would say logistically it's very in-depth, requires meeting with a lot of different people across a lot of different departments. And again, this has been going on for several months, doing what is and making sure we've connected the dots. But we were initially told Plan B was 50% or 6 foot social distancing. So 50% actually would have worked better for schools when that was removed. We went to 6 feet. You have, depending on when the school was built, you may have a classroom that would accommodate 12 to 14 students up till about 18 to 19. So that, at our high schools, especially larger high schools, when you have 35 kids in a class, you know, even with Common Core math, it doesn't divide equally. I've tried it. So it still doesn't work. So you can't really do K-8 plans. So our K-8 plan initially was 2 days. A group A would come Monday and Tuesday. We would, of course, cleaning every day, but deep cleaning on Wednesday. Then group B would come Thursday and Friday. So we'd keep the same kids together. So when we rolled out our plan, we really had high school we called it virtual. It was really not completely virtual, but when we rolled it out, and we are a continuous improvement district, so we always listen to our stakeholders. Well, I got my minutes worth of my phone bill that month because I'd say I fielded at least 200 or 300 phone calls.
Wow.
In a matter of days, and so did our board, concerned that high school students were not getting any face-to-face time. So again, being good listeners in a continuous improvement district, we punted and backed up and said, let's see if we can come up with a better plan. Our high school principals, Dr. Nutting, her team all got together, curriculum people, and come back with what we felt was a compromise to that plan. So high schools.
Go ahead. Let me ask you this, because I know you said that you got feedback, particularly about the high schools, but CMS got some feedback as well from basically from teachers at a recent school board meeting. And I want you to hear what they said, and then I'll get your reaction to it.
After months of working so hard to stay safe, we will be forced back into poorly ventilated classrooms with students and coworkers potentially carrying the virus with only a mask between us. I am frightened that those 2 weeks will result in student infections, teacher infections, and ultimately infections all over Charlotte.
Terrified, petrified, furious. These are the words that my coworkers use to describe their feelings about going back into our school building.
There's nothing that I would rather do than to start the school year in my classroom. But if it is not safe to be in school April and May, it certainly is not safe in August.
I've never been more scared in my entire life. This is not only our lives on the line, but the lives of our family members as well.
We want to be back at school. It's just not safe. You know, we draw the line at dying. We should not have to sacrifice our lives.
So that's a subset of teachers. Maybe not every teacher in the CMS system feels the same way, but I'm certain that there are teachers in the Iredell-Statesville system who may feel that way. What are you hearing from your teachers and your staff?
Absolutely. We polled our teachers many times. And of course, we have about 6 or 7 different plans in place, especially for teachers that feel like they may have an underlying condition or just concerned about coming back. So we plan on offering those teachers the availability of doing remote learning. And we polled our teachers initially, and about 87% felt like we were comfortable about coming back. One thing I can say about Idaho Statesville that I'm proud of is I've lived here all my life, and I've worked in three of the districts that had high poverty. This county has done a tremendous job of keeping schools up to date. So we have very few older buildings that have ventilation issues, as was just talked about. I actually just talked to our assistant superintendent of maintenance and facilities the other day, and he assured me the protocol we have in place will actually, we're fogging our classrooms with a device that's electrostatic, so it actually picks up into the air conditioning system. It kills the bacteria. And, you know, we do have those concerns, because here's where we're at as educators, balancing what's best for kids and what's best for adults. So any decision made is not going to be a win-win, because our parents are concerned students are going to become further behind. And there's already research data out there saying the longer this occurs, that this group of students possibly will never catch up, and it will impact them the rest of their life.
Amanda, so, you were in the classroom, I think, last year, and now you're working for CMS in a different capacity. What have you heard from fellow teachers and fellow staff members? Do they match what we just heard from that raft of CMS teachers who spoke out during the last school board meeting, or are they on a different page?
Like, what you heard is how we all feel. And CMS themselves gave a survey. And just like Dr. James says, their member said that 88% wanted to come back to school. We had our own teacher-led survey for all educators, and our survey data was completely different. Teachers are very scared. And right now, if school districts can't guarantee safe conditions, the safe conditions for educators are also safe learning conditions. And so I just could not see right now sending kids back, because I know that the minimum of mask and social distancing is not enough to protect our babies, especially our Black and brown kids, especially the ones in poverty.
Union County schools are under pressure to open on a fully online basis, and teachers there are ready to aggressively get that point across.
We are going to get in our cars, and we are going to kind of stop traffic in that area, which is right next to the downtown Monroe area. We're hoping to get not just teachers, but parents and community support saying we have to put teachers first. We have to put safety first.
That's Sophia Stevenson, a teacher in Union County Public Schools, who's part of the movement there to get the district to switch from Plan B, where students attend in person on a couple of days a week, and then shift to a fully remote Plan C. They want to go to Plan C completely. Online petitions have evidently gotten hundreds of signatures.
Our goal is, you know, for each teacher to be able to safely educate at home. If we continue to go to Plan B, we will definitely be there. We just don't trust the district to do what it needs to do.
So Yvette, in the minute that I have in this segment, schools are under a lot of pressure to reopen. Do you trust CMS?
I think that CMS is under a lot of pressure. This decision to return or open our schools is too politically charged. If we cared about students, about educators, the way we say that we do, we profess that we do, decision wouldn't even be whether or not to open schools. It would be who are we hiring to determine a safe reopening? How are we planning if this disaster continues? How are we planning for other disasters that could happen? For those teachers and parents who say that, you know, children of lower income need a place, I understand that, but there's a better way.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about back to school with Dr. Jeff James, superintendent of the Iredell Statesville Schools, Yvette Townsend Ingram, a consultant, educational consultant, and a parent of a child at West Meck. Amanda Thompson is a CMS educator, and Gabe Schull is the student advisor at Ardrey Kell High School and a member of the student advisor on the school board who attends Ardrey Kell High School. He's a senior there. Gabe, you have become known in a very short amount of time as a well-spoken, outspoken, pull-no-punches student advisor on the board. I understand, it's my understanding, that you agree with the Plan B Plus decision that CMS arrived at, but and told WCNC that it was personally painful for you to advocate messing up your own school year. This really is screwing up the high school experience for a lot of people. When you talk to your peers, are they in agreement with your support? And why do you support Plan B Plus?
Well, certainly, I think there's, first of all, been a lot of changes to data since we had that last school board meeting and since we've had the Plan B Plus in the first place. I also think that Plan B Plus was really the safest option that was afforded in a motion during that meeting. But besides that, I think there's a lot of mixed feelings, the same way there are with parents or any other group among students, about how they feel about Plan B Plus. I think one of the chief concerns is, how are we going to have a high school experience to like high schoolers, or how are we going to have a middle school or elementary school experience? It's a real problem when kids aren't able to be in a social environment. The thing is that I trust a lot of my peers to be able to make rational decisions and to be able to think rationally about this and understand that lives are more important, and their lives and the lives of their grandparents and parents are more important than their experience. And I think it's a pretty widely understood sentiment that we have to make some hard prioritization in this situation, and that nobody's going to like either outcome, but there is a best case scenario. And I think this is the best we can get.
So as the student advisor on the school board, somebody who was not elected by the people at large, they don't let you come into the private meetings that they have behind the scenes where they set the agenda for the meetings. And what you learn about what they're talking about, you're learning on your feet in the open meeting, which is why you ask a lot of questions, it seems to me. It's one thing to ask questions. It's another thing to offer opinions. Do they listen to you?
So you're absolutely right that it's definitely tough because I don't necessarily have the same information that's available to all the other board members to begin in these meetings. I do think that my opinion has a sway on board members. You know, I really wouldn't put any effort into it if I didn't think it did, because I think it's important to note that I see my position as two important things. One is a medium of communication from students to the board members and board to the students. The other is a way to influence policy and make sure that we can actually get the priorities of students into the hands of the board and into tangible effects that help students. So I do think my voice has an impact on what the board does.
So Gabe and Amanda, we have, did you want to talk, Yvette?
Yeah, I wanted to just say, you know, I have so much great respect for Gabe, and I understand, you know, students wanting to have a normal high school experience and how important it is. And I respect his thought that, you know, he respects the students that he goes to school with to make decisions, but that's not what is being shown. Young people seem to be invincible, and right now they are the hot spot. Again, I think this is a health crisis decision that needs to be made. It was made too political. And to those who would say that, you know, there's no other option for low-income students and parents, I agree. It's not the best situation, but what about the 3 months that low-income students aren't in school during the summer? They face the same thing. So why isn't there a plan to address those issues during the summer months? And then we could go to that same plan during a crisis. So that's why I think that people have become conditioned to a certain response. And that response is based upon politics and how much money we can receive and threats that are, you know, underlying from the government about funding.
Hmm. I take it you're referring to the White House saying that if you don't go back to school, we'll cut your federal funding. I'm not sure that
Absolutely.
That can be done, but maybe it can be. Who knows? Amanda and Gabe, what metrics do you know of that were used to decide on Plan B? And if the school board meets today and decides to go to Plan C, why? What metrics will they have used? Amanda, I'll start with you.
So I just want to say that's the major problem that I still have today, because the governor didn't give us a metrics, Dr. Cohen didn't give us a metrics, so CMS doesn't really have a metrics, okay? And that's the major issue. I do think that the CDC, there was an interview done, I think, last weekend, where he said that he would like for it to be under 5%, you know, on a 10-day span. And I saw the governor of Oregon actually put it out in her state that to all school districts, do not open until you have a 5%, you know, positive overt rate throughout a time period. I think that's important for us to understand that, you know, this whole virtual learning, it is not a forever thing, okay? It is to re-get it down. I think the community, the village has to step up and do their part, you know, putting on their masks, social distancing, staying out of the bars. And I think that's much of the comment, what the community is going to do to help step up and lower these metrics.
Gabe, but what you were on the decision for Plan B, and you'll be on the decision this afternoon. What metrics have you been using at the school board?
So I think Ms. Thompson is absolutely right, where these metrics aren't necessarily the clearest and aren't necessarily the most available to the public at this time. What we do know is that right now CMS has put together a medical advisory team, which is made up of like private healthcare providers, public health directors from the Mecklenburg County, and people from the central office at CMS. We still don't know exactly what those metrics are, which I agree is a problem. I think another problem is that we don't necessarily know which metrics are the best anywhere, right, in this country, of which ones are the most reliable, whether we're looking at cases total or percent of positive cases, each of which have their own benefits from a statistical point of view.
Amanda.
I think that's the main reason why right now opening up on Plan C is the best, because we don't have all the information. I think that once we look at the information and make a legitimate plan, that's when we open up on Plan B.
And Dr. James, I know I have to let you go in about 30 seconds because you have another meeting to go to, but I'm just curious, you may face, as the superintendent of Viral Statesville Schools, a decision to change from what you've already decided to something else, depending upon how conditions evolve. What metrics will you use in that district?
We continue to get, as Amanda says, we continue to get ongoing metrics, and unfortunately they change sometimes from day to day as superintendents. So we've been involved with DHHS from the state level as superintendents, weekly calls, looking at different metrics. I will say that you hit on a key point. I think it's a county by county decision based on the number of cases in your county, the feeling of your teachers, the input from parents, and, you know, the comfort level. I think our employees told us they felt very comfortable that we could provide a safe working atmosphere. So that was one of the metrics. But CDC last Thursday did come out and suggest that we return to school, because there's a risk here. Whether is COVID-19 outweigh the risk of losing this component of your education? There's research already beginning out there that this is going to impact this group of students, as Gabe has said, for the rest of their life. So it's not an easy decision. You have to weigh all the metrics, Dr. James, when you face,
I've asked other people this too, when you face a decision between how this may impact a student for the rest of their life versus not having a rest of their life, how do you
make that decision? But you will get them further behind. So if you're an at-risk student, you're already behind, and you got to have a plan to catch up. And so Yvette already said it. We don't have a good plan in our state now to catch kids up in the summer slide as it is. So even being out further is going to get them even a greater behind in their education if we don't have a way to catch it up.
And so my point was that, you know, just as Mike said, if, you know, what happens if there is an outbreak in a particular school? What happens if there's an outbreak of teachers you don't have to teach? What happens if someone dies as a result of this decision? And I do think that there will be loss of life. I really do. Based on the evidence that I've seen now, the recommendations, I don't think that that it's worth the risk.
And what frustrates me is that everyone now is all about the inequities of schools, because inequities has always been there. And all of a sudden now we're so concerned about our Black and brown kids. So I don't want us to use it as an scapegoat. I want us to put safe learning conditions before anything else. Because if kids feel anxiety, my daughter is 9 and she's afraid to go back to school because of COVID. And so I think we have to put safety first above any and everything. Because I always believe we have to Maslow, which is, you know, making sure our kids feel safe and they feel belonging before you can bloom. And it goes with our instructional pedagogy.
I think it also too, I'm sorry, sends a further message. You know, teachers, educators, staff of education already have this this feeling that has been put out there that they are essential, but also expendable. And I think that it adds to that sentiment that, you know, yes, we desperately need you to be out there to do something, but your life, we're putting a dollar figure on it. And we've been fighting to improve that for so long that it's almost like everyone's conditioned to say, nope, you got to do this at this price. And at this time, they're saying the price could be your life.
We had to let Dr. Jeff James go from Iredell County Statesville Schools because he had another appointment. But stepping in for him for the rest of the hour is Dr. Bowen Nutting, the Director of Communications for Iredell Statesville Schools. Dr. Nutting, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. Thank you.
Following along on the line of what we've just been talking about, and you've been listening in on all of this, I spoke this week to Mark Johnson, the state superintendent of public instruction, for a statewide broadcast that will be airing next Wednesday morning on this program. He's a former CMS teacher who strongly advocates returning to the classroom and says he would allow his second grade daughter to go back to school if Wake County had decided to not to be exclusively online. And here is why.
We have students who need to be back in the classroom for their mental health, but we also have students who, you know, when it comes to the equity gap, we have students who don't have access to really high quality internet or don't have a device. We're working to close those gaps with federal funds, but those students, at the very least, I'd like to see those students be able to have the in-person opportunity, even if that means a very small number.
The problem with internet connections and equipment to provide online learning and environments to provide a decent space to learn online are a problem everywhere in the country. So, Dr. Nutting, what's the situation in Statesville?
Good morning. Actually, that's definitely been an issue for us in Iredell County, especially in the northern end of Iredell County, which is a little more rural. We currently have, we believe, about 450 families who just simply don't have access to their, I mean, there's no service at all where they are for the internet. So we've been working with lots of different companies. We're working with the state to put hotspots and hubs onto school buses. We believe that in Iredell County, if we can get 16 hotspots or hubs, we can either place those on, we're in the process of placing those on school buses and driving those to portions of the county that need internet access. Other things we're looking at are community centers and community hubs where we can put in a hotspot and the folks that at that community hub can enjoy that opportunity as well as allowing the students to come there to access the internet.
There are a significant number of people who advocate for a full return to the classroom because of all the things that Dr. James talked about, including not wanting to lose progress in a child's education. And this is putting that at risk. There's no question about it. Many children don't learn well in an online environment. They need the structure of a classroom. They need to be in the presence of the teacher, and they need that teacher's attention. And also some people depend on breakfasts and lunches to be supplied by schools. And then there are the parents. We had an email from Melissa who says, "We are two essential working parents who cannot work from home and have a five-year-old. The online educational criteria set forward by the North Carolina Department of Education has my kindergartner taking 2 hours of synchronous learning a day, followed by 4 hours of asynchronous learning, 6 hours a day by herself on a computer. Obviously, this is grossly inappropriate for a five-year-old." And another parent, Patricia, writes, "My son has special needs. Due to his severe cognitive issues, online learning is not an option. Special needs students need to be in the classroom." Yvette, you have been very vocal so far in this conversation about the dangers of going back. So what do you say to those parents?
I actually did see the news interview with the parent who was talking about the cognitive issues that her child suffers. Again, I think that it falls upon the school system to have a fallback plan for such an event as, you know, an epidemic or a pandemic where the school has to shut down for any length of time. What if the school building were destroyed by a tornado or a hurricane. Where is the plan? That means that during extraordinary circumstances, there is an extraordinary action to take where those who absolutely must get learning through a different media can actually get that learning. I'm saying it's a lack of planning. And right now, I don't see that changing. They're just doing more of the same, which is it's inaccurate, inappropriate. It's not enough.
Dr.
Nutter. So I just want to give you the lens of an educator. So first of all, thinking about socially emotional. So what CMS has done is that every student who's on virtual or in person will have 30 minutes of social emotional learning of support. Okay, that's the first thing. And we have employees right now, we have 2,100 employees that may be at risk of being furloughed. So why not use the BMTs, the secretaries, the security officers to also be a part of that SEL support, as well as being a part of Learning Pods. So as Dr. Nutton spoke about having, we have community, we have recreation centers that have free Wi-Fi. We have brothers around CMS. Why not also use those people in that location? And the last thing, thinking about how we taught from March until June. In essence, what's kind of crisis education? We had 2 weeks to fix what was wrong, right? And now CMS has done an amazing job to create full, robust courses that had special needs teachers invested, as well as our AVID teachers invested, as well as our ESL parents invested in all this support within these classes.
And we're going to talk about how, what has been done over the summer to get ready for the fall in a moment. Gabe, very quickly.
Yeah, and just to add, I've always found the argument that we should prioritize an educational disparity over a disparity in lives from one area of another, because the fact of the matter is that affluent areas are going to suffer much less by going to school than low-income poverty areas, because those areas have demographics that are much higher at risk and much more likely to be infected. So the fact is that I've always found the argument that there's going to be an inequity in education over inequity in lives to be an unconvincing one.
I know that Dr. Nutting wants to talk about this, and we'll let you do that when we come back, and we will look at what's been done over the summer to get ready for online education or a hybrid version of that when we go back to school in just a couple of weeks. And we're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about going back to school and the challenges therein in COVID-19 time. Amanda Thompson is an instructor at, or an educator rather, at CMS. Yvette Townsend Ingram is a consultant, an educational consultant with the child at West Mecklenburg High School. Gabe Schuld is a student advisor at Ardrey Kell High School, a student advisor on the CMS board who attends Ardrey Kell High School. I'll get it right before the hour's over. And Dr. Bowen Nutting is the director of communications at Iredell Statesville Schools. And I know we were talking just before the break, Dr. Nutting, about the challenges that some parents who really need their kids to be in school are facing when we have online education or a hybrid of the same. I know you wanted to talk about that.
Well, I just want to say that I think, you know, we are at a point where compromise is absolutely such an important word. Here in Iredell County, you know, we have folks that run the gamut. They really want plan A, and then we have the parents that really want plan C. Our goal in the Iredell Statesville Schools is to keep our students safe and to provide the best education possible. And I think that if we can, you know, like you guys were talking about, we've got to have a plan. We can't sit around and talk about it. We have to make plans. So, you know, okay, so let's purchase 16 hotspots and put these hubs in. Yesterday, I was in two meetings about childcare. One was, how can we take our primetime program, which is essentially an after-school program, and make that something a little bigger? How can we open hubs where we'll have a 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. opportunity for childcare for those children that need it? So other things, meeting with folks in our community that are interested in helping with United Way, with the YMCA, with all these different partners in our community that want to provide affordable childcare. I think you're right. We have to make a plan. At this point, though, in Iredell County, we're about compromise. Let's try to bring in as many kids as we can to our schools and feel safe at the same time, but also give parents the opportunity, if they want, to keep their kids at home. So we've beefed up our, we call it virtual ISS, virtual Iredell State Soul Schools. We've added tons of new classes. You can learn virtually in the Iredell State Soul Schools. You can learn on a hybrid model in the Iredell State Soul Schools. Right now, we're not offering full-time face-to-face, but, you know, that's something that we want to work toward. And when the governor tells us that we can do that, we will. But it's all about options and choices.
Eric emails, I have a CMS second grader. I would much rather have the first 3 days with the teacher myself so that I can be prepared to teach my child for the rest of the semester. The kid already knows how to use a computer, he says. Jennifer tweets, my kids aren't scared. They want to go back. Kids are scared if parents are scared. And it has never been Plan B at Charlotte-Mecklenburg. It has been Plan C with 3 days in person. So just please make a decision and stick to it. You can take that comment to the board meeting today, Gabe. Make a plan and stick to it. Dr. Mandy Cohen, who is the state's health director, said a couple of weeks ago that this decision to send kids back to school has to be based on a risk-benefit analysis. And when I talked to the state superintendent of public instruction, Mark Johnson, for a statewide broadcast next Wednesday, I pointed out that a risk-benefit analysis is something an accountant does for a business. It's not what you necessarily do for children. And I asked him if he thought it should apply to children.
I have personally not used a risk-benefit analysis. I am looking at how we now have strict guidance for face coverings and 6 feet social distancing. I do believe we can get students into classrooms with those strict guidelines, and we can have safe in-person learning. I would not ask any student, parent, or teacher to go into a situation that I didn't think was safe. And I've seen actually some summer school courses in session doing these restrictions, and it is possible.
Amanda, you were in the classroom until this year. How possible do you think this is? How difficult will it be for teachers, for lunchroom workers, for bus drivers, and others to make sure that social distancing is achieved and that students keep their masks on, etc.?
That is not, like, using those terms together is not even how a school works. Kids love to be social. I actually gave my kids a love language test, like for kids. And what they found out, what I found out is that a lot of my kids, their love language was touch. So, like, you know, like giving high fives, hitting, playing, kids like that. So that's a part of the whole middle school, high school, elementary experience. Sitting 6 feet apart as a kindergartner is not real school. It's not sociable. And kids can't really learn the social skills needed to be productive citizens in that manner as well. It's unheard of for me to say that.
For all the reasons Amanda just said, it seems to me, Gabe, like, particularly in the lower grades, this is going to be like herding cats. It's going to be really, really difficult to achieve. You said a minute ago that you believe that your peers at the high school level will be able to make rational decisions, which means to me that they'll be able to assess the risks of not wearing a mask or not being socially distant and decide to do the right thing. Do you think that is going to happen? Somebody's going to slip up. Go ahead.
Right. So my statement was that high schoolers are widely agreeing that we should be able to prioritize lives and safety of people over an educational experience, right? The same way we decided not to do a graduation, and that they can be okay with that. That doesn't mean that I think that moment, like, decision making in the moment for every high schooler is going to be the same way. In fact, I can completely understand the fact that there's definitely going to be cases in which kids are going to be told, put your mask over your nose, right? And I think it is going to be a huge challenge and a reason to consider a full Plan C.
Honestly, we watched a school board meeting last week, and we saw a school board member taking off their mask, breathing. And so imagine a student in a class for 8 hours with a mask. You as an adult, you walked into a store. I see a lot of those moving their mask up and down. It's just not going to happen. It's not feasible.
The thing I would say, too, is the decision that these young people are making will impact everyone around them. That it's just like saying, you know, you're infringing upon my rights by requiring me to wear a mask. No, you're infringing upon my right to be in a healthy situation by not wearing a mask. This is a health crisis. It's a pandemic. So it's not about, you know, your choice of comfort. It is about the safety of an entire community and in everybody around you. And I don't think that, you know, just saying that someone is responsible enough to safe distance 6 feet or that they're responsible enough to wear a mask is going to be adequate when you have hotspots pop up of COVID and community spread. And how do we even track, how do we even track community spread
right.
from schools and things of that nature? We have trouble doing that now. So I just, again, I think it goes back to money. Just like you said, it's a cost benefit, benefit. And I think that that is the driving principle behind these decisions.
I spoke last week to Elise Dashie, who's the chair of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board, Dr. Nutting, and we talked a little bit about the bus ride to and from school and how the bus drivers will be the only adult on the bus still, and they will police the social distancing. It'll be one child per seat, and each child will have a mask. And if they don't have a mask at the bus stop, they will be offered a mask by the bus driver. But they will not be denied a ride if they refuse to put on the mask. What's the policy in Iredell-Statesville? Because to me, that seems self-defeating and impossible to enforce.
Well, in Iredell-Statesville schools, we are asking that all riders wear a mask unless they have some type of medical waiver that indicates that they are not able to wear a mask. We also have an attestation form that we'll have all of our families complete before you can get on the bus. If you're not willing to complete the attestation form, then you cannot ride. We've already sent that out to most of our parents. They know that when we start on August 17th, that they have to do that.
So let me stop you for just a second, because Elise Dashie at CMS said no child will be left at the school bus stop because they don't wear a mask. That's not the case in Iredell-Statesville. If you don't sign the form, if you don't wear a mask, you're going to be left at the bus stop? Dr. Nutting?
Conversation that... we're not going to leave a child on the side of the road. I mean, that's obviously we're not going to do that.
But then doesn't that defeat any, but doesn't that defeat any protections that you've put in place?
No, you have to have a mask if you're riding a bus in the Iredell-Statesville schools. If you're out there without a mask, then we'll address that. We're not going to leave somebody on the side of the road. It may mean we're calling families. We're reaching out to families. Again, this is about solving problems. And we are asking as many parents as possibly can, please bring your child to school. I've been doing this for 28 years. We always ask children, please ride the bus. Now, for the first time ever, we're saying, please bring your child to school. So if you can get a ride, we want you to. If you need a ride, we are going to provide one, but you must wear a mask.
Amanda, I just want to say that as an educator, I know a lot of parents send their school kids to school sick right now in a normal day, getting Tylenol, temperature down, go to school, right? And then an hour or 2 hours later, we find out the child is sick. So I just think that, and I know we can't solve everything, but I think a piece of paper at a bus stop is not going to stop a parent from sending a child to school sick.
A lot of concerns were raised last spring as a result of the experience that teachers and students had as they were thrown into the deep end of the pool without warning. And suddenly we went from classroom to online. But when I talked to State Superintendent of Public Education or Public Instruction, Mark Johnson, he says they've been very proactive over the summer to make things work better this fall.
Some things parents will be happy to hear. We're putting out programs that, you know, the little things like not having to log in to a bunch of different apps to do different assignments, but also the big things from my own daughter's experience. She did not like remote learning when she had to fill out an electronic handout, when she had to just watch a YouTube video. Her part of remote learning that she actually enjoyed was when she had one-on-one time with her teacher, even if it was over video, or one-on-one time with small groups or her class. Even if it was over video, she still felt connected to her class. That's what we're setting up to have more of, even for the districts that are going to remote learning. And then we're supporting them with digital curriculum options that we've purchased with federal dollars to make sure all that's taken care of and the teachers can focus on the relationships with their students.
You can hear my entire conversation with Mark Johnson next Wednesday on this program as WFAE participates with all the public radio stations across the state in a statewide broadcast on education. Let me talk about with Amanda and with Dr. Nutting about two of the things, or one of the things he just said. He just said that they're setting up things so that students can have more one-on-one time with their teacher, even in an online environment. Amanda, is that going to be the experience at CMS?
I think one of the things that CMS is doing a really good job is giving, we are giving educators already full courses already made. And educators can personalize those courses for their students' needs. So yes, you know, students will be able to get one-on-one time as well as small group time if we utilize all of our employees, our classified and our certified.
What about in your system, Dr. Nutting?
Well, you know, in Iredell Statesville Schools for the last 10 years, we've been working on blended learning and lots of professional development with our teachers as it relates to blended learning. And this virus has just put us on fast forward with learning how to make sure that our lessons are high quality and that children have the opportunity to truly participate. I too am a parent of a student in the schools. And, you know, there are opportunities, even when we were in the middle of the emergency learning, where my son was having Socratic seminars with other class members in his English class. So I feel like in Iredell Statesville Schools, we have some great professional development and our teachers are ready to face this idea of synchronous and asynchronous learning. And no, you know, your computer is not an opportunity for you to give a child a worksheet on a computer. That's not what it is. There are just so many opportunities for us to take learning to the next level when we use the tool that is technology.
Gabriel, you're a young person, so you're technologically savvy and probably a lot savvier than the adults, including the teachers. So what was your experience last spring, and what suggestions do you have to make things better if we have to go to an online-only paradigm?
So I think the number one concern that we had when we just switched into the spring all of a sudden was just a lack of consistency. A lot of the problem was that a lot of different teachers had different plans for how they were going to operate remotely. A lot of them were doing synchronous learning, but some of them were not, right? So that was a problem. And there was also a consistency problem across schools with how different principals were handling the issue. And so that means you had drastically different educational outcomes happening within from teacher to teacher and from school to school. So I think the new plan that CMS has is a pretty good one so far, which emphasizes a 40% synchronous learning at least multiple times a week.
I have 30 seconds left. Yvette Ingram, you work a lot with, you're very concerned about disparities in education. Do you fear that online only education will heighten those disparities?
I feel that if we do not have the paradigm shift of doing things differently, of planning differently, we are in a new era. I don't think that we're going to return back to the normal. I think this is the new normal. I think that there are ways that you can have specialized training for kids with autism and things of that nature where they're not in a group setting. I think that there's a better way.
Yvette Ingram is an educational consultant with a child at West Mech. Amanda Thompson is an educator at CMS. Gabe Schull is the student advisor to the school board from Ardrick Hill High. And Dr. Bea Nutting is director of communications at Iredell Statesville Schools. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.